Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast, where we interview business owners, leaders, or marketing professionals to find out their lessons and stories for success.
Welcome to episode 113 of the CMO Marketing Podcast with me, your host, Simon Dell. Thank you very much for tuning in. If this is your first time here, then welcome. If you are a repeat visitor, then thank you for coming back and thank you for listening again. Now, the usual announcements before we jump into today's guest, please rate and review us on anywhere really, anywhere you can rate and review us. iTunes would be good. You can probably rate and review us on Spotify, probably. I don't know. But anywhere that you can give us 5 stars and share how great we are, that'd be really appreciated. A big shout out to thepodcastboss.com, Gilberto, for all his hard work putting this together. Even bigger shout out for Cora, Cora Faithful, who works for us, who is the... Cora has many roles in CMO, but one of her major roles is nagging the shit out of me to record these intros. And finally, she's got me to do it. So thank you, Cora. Come and like us, follow us, find out a bit more about us. It's great if you could come and connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter, or on Instagram, TikTok. We've got some great videos up on TikTok. We think you'll like those. Just come and say hello. And if you want to find out more about what we do, it's www.cmo.com. Now, today's guest, gentleman by the name of Mark McGinley. He is the CEO of Couriers Please. They are an Australian company based down in Sydney. And you probably guess what they do with a name like that. He is, he's worked his way up through the ranks of Couriers Please, started there in May 2003, and he turned into the, he was promoted to the CEO in April 2016. It is absolutely fascinating to hear his opinion and take on digital e-commerce from the man that is making, that is getting all of our packages from the websites that we buy them from to our homes and to our offices. Some of the stories he has for the volume of trade that has occurred since COVID is absolutely amazing. And he is a thoroughly interesting guy all the way from Northern Ireland via Wales all the way now into Sydney. We think you'll enjoy it. So please listen in. And enjoy the podcast with Mark McGinley.
Welcome to the CMO Marketing Podcast. We have on the show today Mark McGinley, who is the CEO of Couriers Please. It is fantastic to have you on the show. So thank you very much for joining me in the car today. So I know you're a busy guy, but really appreciate you being on the show.
I'm not driving, Simon. Just if you should make that clear.
Right. Thank God for that. God, that could have been awkward. And for those who obviously, you know, may have guessed it very quickly, you're obviously in Australia as the CEO, but you've come a long way from Ireland. There was a bit of Wales in your background. How did you end up in Australia?
Yeah, my brother has lived in Australia for maybe 30 years. We came over for the millennium in 2000, had a fantastic time. Then we came back later that year for the Sydney Olympics. And I mean, it was unbelievable. So I think we got a bit of a false sense of the traffic, et cetera, in Sydney at the time. But, you know, the people were so friendly, the climate. And like, we were 40 years of age with 3 kids. Myself and my wife had our own businesses in Belfast. We ran a small chain of restaurants. I had a small wholesale business. So we've all been small business people. We decided there and then that we would up sticks. I mean, Belfast is a tough city. It's improved a lot since then. But, you know, at that time, pretty tough working conditions as well. I mean, when you're running cafes and restaurants, and we opened up a new restaurant in an area where all of a sudden people were rioting outside the door, and we, you know, it really impacted us. It's not great for business.
No, I can imagine.
Yeah, we up sticks and came to Australia with the intention of starting our own businesses up in Australia. Yeah. And that was a lot more challenging than we thought. You know, we were looking at import and export and the fees, the duties, the taxes. When you start to look into that sort of thing, you know, employing people is not easy in Australia as well. So that was a decision to uproot the family to come to Sydney. And then after a while, 6 months or so of trying to start my own business, my next door neighbor was the CEO of Couriers Please at the time.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, he said, look, there's an operations job down there. Why don't you, you know, it'll keep you going for a few months. I'm there 18 years, actually. I started off and I had no experience of logistics as such, you know, and obviously that was, you know, e-commerce, as we'll talk about later, hadn't really kicked in Australia at that time. So I joined Couriers Please. So at that time, Couriers Please was owned by New Zealand Post.
Okay.
It's a franchise-based last-mile carrier. At that time, a traditional courier company. The growth has been amazing. Yeah. And as I say, they were by New Zealand Post up until 2011. Between 2011 and 2014, Couriers Please was part of a joint venture between New Zealand Post and DHL.
Okay.
And then it was sold to Singapore Post in 2015. Okay. So it's 100% owned entity of Singapore Post. So like I've been there all that time and just seen the transformation and growth has been phenomenal. So the reason I never left was because things kept changing. You know, first of all, I kept, you know, started off in operations and then in 2006 was made national sales manager. And then 2011, national commercial manager. I've been CEO for the last 6 years. So, you know, I have moved through the organization. The organization has grown. The market has grown. Mm. It's a very, very challenging market, Simon. I'm sure we'll talk later about it. But also there's a lot of innovation in last mile logistics and e-commerce. So, you know, it's a dull moment.
Just from your own personal sort of career, that moment you became CEO, I think 2016. Was that something you'd put your hand up for, or was that someone just sort of tapped you on the shoulder? I mean, was it a surprise, or was it something that you were kind of working towards?
Look, I was basically number two at the time, the national commercial manager working closely with the CEO. And when he left, I got tapped on the shoulder. And so I didn't actually apply for the role. The CEO of Singapore Post at the time rang me and said, look, are you interested in this role? It didn't take me long to say yes. So yeah, it was a very quick process.
Yeah.
I did have to, interestingly, I had to remain confidential for 6 months.
Wow.
So that was a stressful time, 6 months of not being able to tell anyone that I've become the CEO. It was just the politics at the time and whatever. So that was interesting. All these roles, sometimes you don't think you're ready for them until you start to do them, and then you just grow into them.
Yeah.
I've worked with a lot of really good people over the years and a lot of not so good people, like, you know, who are really good positions, and I've come across in other companies or other organizations, and you wonder yourself, how did they get? Like, everyone has their own style. And I've learned a lot from a lot of the people I've worked, but I've seen what doesn't work as well.
Have you changed as a person moving from a more of a sort of management role to the leadership role? What's maybe the one thing you've noticed in yourself change over that process?
You do less of the hard work. The presentations, the research, you evolve into directing people and they do all the hard work for you, you know. If anyone ever asked me advice around leadership, one of the main things is get quality people. I mean, I'm blown away by the quality of people that I work with. You know, they make you look so good. You know, they're passionate, motivated. You get those sort of people in your organization, you know, they'll just grow the organization for you. So the biggest difference was, in the early days, you were sort of putting ideas together and then you had to put business cases together and, you know, do a lot of the hard work. But if you're doing the CEO role right, you know, your role is more, you know, leadership, vision, culture. Mm. You know, you need to get away from that micromanagement. Because I was in sales and commercial, that worked well for our organization because I was still able to go out and sell to customers, meet customers. Yeah. I think it was a really important part of the role. I'm not an IT expert. I'm not a CFO. So I got really good people that can do that and I trust. And, you know, I don't need to interfere with what they do. I just need to understand what they do, but I don't need to interfere with it.
Yeah.
And by going out selling and meeting customers, which is what I enjoy doing, that's what a CEO should be doing anyway.
Yeah.
So it worked really well.
The organization, and correct me if I'm wrong, the organization is a franchise built business, isn't it?
Yes.
How many franchisees do you have at the moment?
We've got about 900 franchisees.
Okay.
We'll maybe talk later about the COVID growth. I mean, last year was unbelievable.
Yeah.
We've currently got 900 franchisees. We were originally a contract model. And the ACCC looked at us around, I don't know, it was a long time ago now, 2011 maybe, and said, look, you're operating like a franchise. So then we were the largest transformation of a contractor model to franchise model in Australian history at that time. We migrated about 650 people to franchisees. And we're a very proud franchise business. We are a logistics business that happens to be
a franchise
business that our main focus is the logistics, and we use the franchise model to do that. So our franchisees operate within their own designated territory, and they earn their income from picking up and delivering parcels within that territory.
Yeah.
So the harder they work, the more money they earn. And so we have a lot of businessmen, who have maybe 3-4 vans and put on extra employees. And we have a lot of, you know, commercial entrepreneurial type franchisees. Yeah. It's a great business model because they're a small business supporting small business. And, you know, they work really well with our customers, same face every day. They're really motivated to grow the business.
Yeah.
So it's a really good model.
And I guess franchises, certainly in Australia, have had a bit of a kicking in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years. And everybody talks about the bad franchises who aren't doing the right thing and all that. But very rarely people talk about the good franchisees or the, you know, the good franchisors. You know, presumably you must have some very successful people working, you know, and making, you know, making good money as a franchisee for you guys.
The one difference, Sam, between us and I think nearly any other franchise business in Australia is we have a minimum earnings that you cannot below. So most franchise businesses, and I've a lot of experience in franchising. I was a franchisee in the past. I've been a franchisor. And you buy into a system. And so say a coffee shop. Look, you buy into the system. And then, you know, the corporation, the franchisor will help you, you know, help you with location, marketing, etc. But then, you know, your success, a lot of your success is down to you. And sometimes you don't necessarily turn over enough money to make that business sustainable. And, you know, you're relying on family members typically. It can be a really stressful experience. Where at CP, if you fall beneath a certain threshold, we will top you up financially.
Wow. Okay.
The difference between us and a lot of the, like a coffee shop, a franchise or a restaurant or, you know, lots of others, they're not a network. They're individual businesses.
Yeah, yeah.
We need all our franchisees to be successful or the network collapses.
Fails. Yeah, absolutely.
If I have no one delivering the parcels in a certain area, it impacts everybody.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference between us and other franchisees. Look, don't get me wrong, there's, you know, e-commerce has really impacted negatively our business model because we're actually selling, our average price is probably half of what it was 20 years ago. 20 years ago, our franchisees would be charging $12, $13 for a parcel across town, Sydney. You know, the average price is probably half of that now.
Yeah.
So our franchisees and us as a company, we're working, I'd say, 3-4 times harder for the same money.
Yeah.
Due to the rise of e-commerce and, you know, the rise of Amazon free. Because the one thing, the biggest change since I've been at Courage Please is the rise of e-commerce and consumer expectations. So consumers you know, they want choice of location. They want choice of time. So I want a twilight delivery, same day, next day. I want it a locker. I want it picked up from my home, delivered to my work. They want all this choice, but the one thing they don't want to do is pay for it.
Yes.
So, you know, we're actually in a business where no one actually wants to pay for.
Yeah.
A lot can go wrong. And then, like, the social media abuse is off the scale. So the challenge for carriers like Couriers Please and others is to meet those expectations.
Yeah.
We're on no illusion that there's no, if you want to stay in this business, you have to meet those expectations. You can't can't complain about it. It's the reality. You just have to provide a better service. And when you provide a better service, you hope you can charge more for it. So whereas it's free, somebody has to pay for it. And typically it's the retailers. So the retailers will have to absorb that into their costs. But then the retailers put that pressure on us from a price point of view, because, you know, they really struggle to absorb some of this pricing. And you see that quite typically in e-commerce. And it's driven by Amazon especially, I think.
Do you think consumer expectations are changing slightly? I kind of feel that maybe 3-4 years ago they were very demanding in terms of time and costs, but are they getting a little bit more relaxed, sort of saying, well, I don't mind if it takes 2 or 3 days to get to me, and I'm a bit more flexible about where it's delivered? Because you've seen the rise of all the sort of, you know, dropping points and all those kind of things. My wife always seems more comfortable saying, well, I'll go and pick it up from the post office. Doesn't really bother me. So do you think that's changing slightly, or do you think the consumer's getting even more demanding?
I think what they want is consistency, Simon. It's not about the speed. There is a market for same day deliveries and urgent deliveries. And one of the reasons people sort of select that option is because of the certainty of it.
Yeah.
It's the most likely way that they'll get something in a timely fashion. But they don't really need it that urgently. What they want is, when you say you're going to deliver it, you deliver it.
Yeah.
It could be next day, 2 days, doesn't matter, 3 days, as long as, when you say it's coming on Thursday, it comes on Thursday, because people are making plans. If they want you to leave it at the door, you know, they want to be comfortable that they're going to be back within a certain period of time. The collection points that you mentioned, I mean, we partner with a company called Hubbed, who've got over 2,000 collection points. And we are really trying to encourage consumers to use these collection points, because for a number of reasons. One is sustainability. So we've got data that shows, you know, it's about a 36% improvement in CO2 emissions, because our data shows that consumers were going to go there anyway, to these collection points as part of their journey. So, you know, that's a trip saved. It doesn't really make sense for Couriers Please or other carriers to deliver, you know, 20 to 30 residential deliveries when all 30 can deliver to one point. So for us, we do get a financial benefit because there's a consolidation. The consumers get the benefit because it'll get there quicker, and it's a good experience. We're not leaving cards. You know, there's no dispute over where the parcel was left.
Yeah,
somebody there, it's a safe drop-off. And then the third thing is sustainability, and that's a huge trend in our industry at the moment. And you talked about consumer expectations. I mean, we've seen a lot of data. The consumers are expecting will invest in sustainable solutions, buy sustainable products, and are looking for a sustainable delivery service as well. So, you know, that's a big pillar of our strategy at the moment, is our sustainability strategy. But yeah, consumers, I think it's more that they want consistency rather than not necessarily a speed.
Yeah. Talk to me then about how the business changed last year. Obviously, COVID must have been, well, I guess it must have been fantastic for you, or a complete nightmare. I mean, one or the other. How do you, what happened, and how did you kind of adjust to that?
Every cloud has a silver lining. Look, initially, there was a lot of uncertainty in the market.
Yeah.
You know, would we be allowed to trade? Are we an essential service?
Yeah.
So, like, our first priority, and it's obvious, was our staff and our franchisees. So the first thing we did was, we just made everyone work from home, like with immediate effect. You know, even though we hadn't got the connectivity on day one, or, you know, we hadn't gotten all the necessary equipment that you needed on day one, we just made sure that we would start there. And then our IT people work, you know, weekends and nights getting, you know, connectivity. We furnished them with, you know, people were taking their chairs, their monitors home with them. We were always a pretty flexible company pre-COVID.
Yeah.
We had people working from home certain days. We had people, one lady who works for me starts at 4 a.m. because it allows her to pick her kids up at 3. Other people were coming right. at 10, leaving at 6. So we were always a really good, flexible workplace, and we're continuing to do that. Actually, what we're doing now around work from home is more the mental side of things. So
right.
we know physically that you can do your job, but, you know, there's a lot of studies around the mental struggles of people working in isolation, no connectivity. They're maybe new to the business. Maybe their home situation isn't ideal to be working. You know, might have young kids, or there might be a care. So that's where we're sort of going now, is the mental side of working from home. We're quite committed to the flexible workplace. You know, we're actually only mandating that you come into the office 2 days a week. We try to make that the same 2 days, so as people can, you know, that's the whole point, right? You're connected to your team and you can bond. So that was the first thing we did around our staff. And then the franchisees, you know, obviously we had to make our depots safe. So, you know, we did things like we had a stagger shift time, so as we hadn't got too many people in at once. Mm. We obviously sourced very quickly, you know, masks and hand sanitizers, which we still provide free to all our franchisees. Like during the Victorian lockdown, we provide masks 3 times a day because they're not designed to be used consistently. So we had van sanitation centers set up around all our locations. We introduced contactless pickups, contactless deliveries. And one of the best things we did, Simon, was, we also give financial support. So we introduced a new type of leave, which was COVID leave. So that was for all staff and franchisees to get tested. We didn't want people being the hero and coming into work because they've got a cold.
Yeah.
Because if you're a franchisee, your livelihood depends on you working.
Of course.
We didn't want people coming in and saying, well, if I don't come in, I'm going to lose money. So we provided that financial support to everyone to make sure that, you know, they were safe and they were doing the right thing. And that worked really well. And then the last thing we did was we introduced private testing. So during one of the many Victorian outbreaks, we got in private testers, and we were able to test 250 people in one morning, get the results at night. So it allowed us to continue working and give the franchisees and staff comfort that, you know, we were a COVID-free organization. Yeah. So that was on that side. And then the growth, I mean, we grew 80% last year. I mean, We're 3 to 5 years ahead of where we thought we would be. And during the Victorian lockdown, you know, when you talk about the Victorian government, you know, some people think they did a great job and others don't. I'm not here to criticize them. But anyway, our growth was 80%. Actually, in Victoria, it was 120% more than the previous year. But we had 30% less staff to do it because the government didn't want any more people in those facilities. They didn't want us to hire any more. But you're talking about leadership, and the way our team in Victoria stood up, you know, they were working night and day, getting the premises cleaned 3 times a day, deep cleaned at night, operating and delivering those parcels without missing a beat throughout that time was phenomenal. You know, we introduced, and we still got them today, like, our BCP called, a business continuity plan. We every morning at 9 o'clock now, we've got a national call. In the early days, they lasted an hour and a half around, you know, what should we do about masks? What do we do about this? What do we do? And now it only might last 10 minutes, but it was really effective for making quick decisions as to, so the whole team could react to it. You know, if there was a delay in line haul, if we had to close a depot for deep cleaning, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? and everyone was able to just make really quick decisions. And that was one of the most effective things that we did at that time. And then the leaders that just came through, that was phenomenal. You really, at a time of crisis, you can really see how good some of your team are. And a lot of leaders grew out of that. Getting back to the growth thing, we opened up 6 new facilities to cope with the growth. We hired 200 extra franchisees. We had grew our staff by about 200. We invested millions of dollars in new software and technology. Our franchisees be more efficient. We had to buy more, and you couldn't get half this stuff. There was a van shortage.
Yeah.
We couldn't get van. Yeah. We had to buy cages, put the freight in. And we did a phenomenal job all year. Where we really struggled, and it's a lesson learned for next year, was the cyber weekend.
Right, yeah.
That just killed us. And,
right.
We did not perform well as we should have for those 2 or 3 weeks leading into Christmas. We had that much freight sand, we couldn't put it anywhere. In Sydney alone, we had to hire 3 pop-up facilities just to put the freight in. And we'd spent months and months planning for the volume. So we would go to all our major retailers, what do you expect to do this peak? They would give us a number. We would add 30% onto it. One retailer planned to give us about 250,000 parcels in a month. They gave us 360,000 parcels in 2 days. And to try and find...
You can't plan for that, can you? No.
Not a pleasant experience for anyone
working
for Currys, please. And it wasn't a pleasant experience for our consumers. So, we did apologize at the time. And by the way, Simon, this is a global problem. It wasn't just us.
Yeah.
Amazon in the US had a switch off. They were the fulfillment by Amazon. They'll deliver on behalf of others. They stopped doing that. FedEx stopped taking extra customers on UPS. And the same in Australia. The freight was backed up onto the streets and all the carriers in Australia. It was a really tough time. And we've spent, ever since then, we're planning for this peak to make sure it doesn't happen again. So, we're going to invest in more facilities, more franchisees, more drivers. But you can't scale up for that sort of volume. The cyber weekend was 120% more than the year before.
Yeah.
And a lot of bricks and mortars retailers have pivoted from maybe 10% of their sales were online last year to about 50% online.
Just on that note there, do you see a growth in any particular categories? Obviously you guys don't necessarily understand what's in every package, but I guess you kind of get an understanding of where that growth is coming from. But is there any particular kind of areas that you've seen changing? Is it fashion or electronics or
prior to COVID it was a traditional what you would expect, fashion, electronics. The big trends that we see, maybe slightly short term, was office equipment. Obviously more people working from home. Renovation sector has gone through the roof. Sportswear, sports goods was another one that went through the roof. The big two really, we're not really in this space, is alcohol and food. So many people are ordering their alcohol online, and obviously their groceries online through, companies like obviously Woolworths and Coles. So they've grown massively, but it all rose, Simon. I think Australia Post stats show there's 1 million new addresses that they were delivering to last year.
Right.
A lot of those people will stick to it, stick online. So
have you seen that trend continue? It's not slowing down?
Well, no, it hasn't dropped. It slowed down, but it hasn't dropped to what it used to be.
Okay.
So it's still, I'd say, 40% more than it was a year ago, but it's not grown double digits from there, right? It's more... So it has calmed down, but more people are shopping online. And as they get more comfortable with it, I think, it's only going to go one way. We're way behind other markets like the US and the UK as regards our percentage of online sales. But look, it's always going to be an omni-channel experience. People love shopping, love touching the goods. And what we're seeing with all our major retailers is trying to merge their online and bricks and mortars together and give that, holistic consumer experience. And that makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's two more kind of questions I wanted to ask you. I think the first one, I'm trying to work out which one I want to do, which order I want to do this. You talked about sustainability and all those kind of things. And I want to sort of think about sustainability and technology. Where does the delivery industry sort of move to in the next 10 years? There's a lot of talk about drones. There's a lot of talk about, electric cars. There's a lot of talk about autonomous cars as well. Are they realistically things on your horizon, or are you just sort of taking them all with a pinch of salt?
Oh, look, I'll take two of those with a pinch of salt. The drones, there is a user case for drones. Again, remote medical deliveries, ship-to-shore deliveries, definitely very, very niche. There's no way there's going to be masses of drones flying over Sydney. security reasons, there's just a million reasons, right? So we're not focusing on drones, a bit of a novelty in our industry, like that last mile delivery.
Yeah.
The autonomous vehicles, they are trialing that in certain places. In Circular Quay in Sydney, there's but it has been there is a person following behind it. So, the one for us, the obvious ones that we can do is, we're 100%, our operation is carbon neutral, and we're looking to offset our fleet by, 2030. But that's just offsetting. That sort of allows us to continue to do what we're doing. The technology we use around fleet optimization and route optimization certainly makes us, I think it's about 30% more efficient. So there's a efficiency there. Using the collection points, as I said earlier, in Poland, 80% of all deliveries are delivered to lockers. We've got a very low adoption of lockers in Australia so far, but that's a more sustainable solution. We've got micro hubs at the moment where we are bringing the freight in bulk to a location, and then the deliveries are a lot smaller journeys.
Yeah,
do that final mile. That helps a lot. But the real one, and you mentioned there's EVs, electric vehicles. I visited an electric vehicle company last week, and the technology is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's a wee bit expensive, so it's three times the price of a traditional van or truck, and it takes 5 years to get the payback. Now, as a company, I'm prepared to invest in that, but it's hard to get an independent franchisee to do that. It doesn't go 5 years. What we'd like to see, Simon, is some government incentives for electric vehicles. And, that would accelerate the use of them, the adoption of them. I mean, you don't have to look at our markets. You look at London.
Yeah.
London, yeah. I think the diesel might be already banned from the city of London. Right. Petrol's going to get banned soon. The taxis are all transitioned to electric. I mean, a company I look at quite closely, DPD, their plan for 2025 is to have 25 million parcels delivered by electric vehicles, 25 electric micro centres in 25 cities. I mean, that's the sort of thing that Couriers Please are looking at the moment, is the electric vehicle side of things.
Yeah,
there are limitations. There's probably a 250-kilometre radius. It doesn't work for all our type of freight. But it does work where it needs to, and that's the inner city. Yeah. Where you've got that density. So yes, for rural deliveries, but then it's not as necessary, right? So we definitely see electric vehicles as, that's the future, and government needs to introduce incentives and also then the penalties as well, they need to encourage us to get these vehicles. Yeah. I mean, the guy who was selling me electric vehicles made a good point. He said he's always asked, what will the value of my electric vehicle be in 5 years' time? Mm. Well, he flips it the other way around. He says, well, what's the value of your diesel vehicle in 5 years' time? Governments start to introduce these sort of things, which they should, right?
Yeah.
So, we'll get on board when that happens to encourage franchisees to invest in it. We're starting to look at our facilities around, making sure we've got the charging stations, et cetera, required to do it. Because that is, you said 10 years there, but I'm hoping a lot sooner than that.
Yeah. My last question today, obviously the courier industry, the delivery industry, everybody, you know, in your area, your industry, tends to get picked on quite a lot. You know, there's various TikTok videos, some of them quite funny, you know, but how do you guys deal with that online abuse, that negativity online? Because I suspect for people like yourself, it must be pretty constant to have to deal with that.
It is. And one of the challenges we've always got is our brand has been, and by the way, you've seen everybody gets abuse.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's not just one of you. It's the whole industry. Yeah.
I'm pretty thin-skinned, I have to say. Yeah. But I do take it personally. obviously, the first thing we need to do is deliver the parcel on time and then answer the phones on time and fix the problem, right? We have, on product review, for example, I think there's about 5,000 reviews. And we would have delivered 20 million parcels at that time. But our brand is dictated by the 5,000 reviews, right? Not the millions.
Of course. Yeah.
So we do respond to every social media complaint, and sometimes we can help, and sometimes it's too late, right? But a lot of times we can help, and people are really grateful. Look, they were just frustrated at that time. No one was answering the phone. They get angry, but they don't. They rarely go back, Simon, and remove the negative or, you know, give an update on it. We use a company called Trustpilot.
Yes.
And Trustpilot actually, so it's proactive. Yeah. So we've got 500,000 reviews, I think, from off the top of my head. And we're like around four stars.
Yeah.
Because that's a much more balanced, you know, reflection of our delivery service. Yeah. I mean, you think about it, our delivery, the industry runs around 95% delivery on time.
Okay.
If you're delivering millions of parcels, which we all are, so that's a big number that aren't being delivered on time.
Yeah.
It's just a reality. And it is very challenging for the logistics industry because no one ever sends you a video or a TikTok video saying, I got my parcel today, thank you. Yeah. You know, it just doesn't happen. It's only when things go wrong. The numbers are so big, Simon, that shit happens. And, you know, it's a bane of my life, these social media complaints. Because, look, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying they're not true, but there's no context to them.
Yeah.
Expectation
versus reality sometimes, you know, it's, you know, people expecting things to be there probably in like a 15-minute window or something like that when it's just, you know, those kind of things potentially aren't feasible for what people are expecting to happen.
I mean, like, I think people, the most common thing that I get is, I could have jumped in a car and driven and delivered that myself, you know, the time you delivered it, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot can go wrong in logistics. And the other thing is people... It could be your T-shirt is the most important thing in your life when you order it, or your handbag or whatever. And it could be $1,000 handbag or whatever. Mm. For us, it's a $6 piece of business, not $1,000 transaction. But we do represent the brands. If you've ordered that from Nike, we stuff up the delivery. That reflects on Nike. And we understand that. So we're constantly working on it. And we understand it's a huge issue. As I say, it's small comfort that everybody gets hammered. So we're not uniquely hammered.
Yeah.
As I say, a lot can go wrong. It's just like trucks get derailed, you know, traffic.
Yeah.
You know, you look at this, if you live in Sydney or
Melbourne. Yeah, Sydney traffic. Yeah, absolutely.
You can be driving along, trying to deliver a parcel and, like, Sydney's seven times the size of London, right? Seven times the size of London. We service Perth, which is a six-hour flight away. That's like someone in London, you know, servicing New York as part of their network. There's a lot happens. There's a lot can go wrong. You'd be shocked at the number of bad addresses.
No, I wouldn't. Honestly, I wouldn't. I wouldn't be shocked at all. So I've worked with enough e-commerce companies here in Brisbane. I'd be shocked. That wouldn't shock me at all. People who can't even type their own right address in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you say 3 High Street, Sydney. Like, there's 20 High Streets in Sydney. You know, units are a massive challenge for us.
Yeah.
We can't get access to units, and it's not secure to leave parcels where people can steal them. So that's a challenge. And then people say, oh, you didn't try. Well, our franchisees don't get paid to try twice.
No.
So they will not go to your house and not try and deliver it because they don't get paid to do that. Do you know what I mean? They can't. So we're not motivated. Our whole motivation is to get that parcel in the consumer's hand as quickly as possible first time. Every time we don't do that, we lose money. Because people will ring. Every time we answer the phone, we lose money. Because the margins are so thin in our business. Every failed delivery is a loss. And that's the same for all carriers.
Mark, it's been absolutely fantastic having you on the show. Really appreciate your insights. And I can only applaud what you guys do. And, you know, to most people, you're an essential service to the retailers and certainly the people receiving the goods. So, mate, appreciate your thoughts and, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Simon. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening in to episode number 113 of the CMO Marketing Podcast. We look forward to you joining us again next week.